You can hear our show on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. On Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or join in on the conversation on Google Plus.
Hello and welcome to Screen View episode 15? Yes, 15.
I didn't realize we were doing the intro.
Yeah, I didn't either. I was sitting here going, where's the dark short in my... Oh, gosh.
Yeah. All right.
Welcome to our show today.
Welcome to totally our show.
Everything's just as planned out as always.
Yes.
Absolutely.
As always, we have this carefully scripted and laid out. Even.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to laugh ourselves silly.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a great. So, in case you didn't know, we are Screen View. This is episode 15. I have with me, who apparently didn't remember that this we were doing a show today, John and Amy.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. So it is Thursday.
It's
always Thursday.
It's always Thursday. Is it always Thursday?
It's the day just before Fringe.
Yes, exactly.
It's always
That's
Thursday.
That's the day I remember it as. No, Fringe is not on tonight. It's on tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Right.
So what we're going to do is today we will be discussing some Oscars. You know, the Oscars came out. The 84th Academy Awards nominee list came out this year, this past Tuesday. Yes, Tuesday. So we'll be talking about that. We'll be recapping the box office. We'll talk about Fringe. But before that, we'll, I got to see a screener of The Grey, so we'll talk about that.
Nice. So, cool.
All right, so I don't know if you guys had a chance to read any of this, these Oscar nominations, but with the heavily nominated movie, surprisingly enough, was Hugo, which is...
I wasn't surprised by that.
Really? You weren't?
Nice. No, I was. I was surprised.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were, actually. I guess it kind of, like, snuck out of nowhere, right? Because it was, like, The Descendants and... Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, like Hugo.
It's probably the, I don't know. Out of all the movies that were nominated for Best Actor or Best Picture, it's probably the biggest moneymaker.
That's true.
Mm.
Yeah, that's true because
which is odd for, you know, an Oscar nominated movie.
Yeah. Well, most of the films are pretty poor in the box office so far.
Yeah.
So. Hugo is nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, of course, with Martin Scorsese, Art Direction, Cinematography, Costume Design, just a long list of ones that, we'll get.
It's nominated for Best Picture and Best Director and 9 other Oscars that really no one really cares about all much.
Right. That deserve to be acknowledged, but most people are not as
they do. I was talking to my mom the other day about the Oscars, and basically I was like, it's an easy fix to boost up the Oscars. They already have another night where they give out a lot of the technical Oscars.
Right.
They could do that with these, Best Foreign Documentary, Best Foreign Short Film, Best Foreign Animated Film, Best Animated Film. They could do that with a lot of these other movies that, in my mind, and probably a lot of other people's mind, just take up a lot of time in the Oscars. And really focus on the 5 big ones and, some other little ones, I guess. And then, you know, instead of having everyone, only people who were in the recent movies or nominated movies invited to the Oscars, have all the A-list actors nominated to the Oscars. That way, there's people there that people want to see. You know, like, people like to see, you know, Jack Nicholson and Tom Hanks and all those people, even though they're not necessarily in a movie. They want to see them. They want, you know, for the women, they want to see, you know, what the women are wearing and, you know, this and that. So, it just, I don't know. It seems like an easy fix that they'll never do. Because they're so focused on these other Oscars that, you know, they really, you know, the movies come and go and you never hear from them again.
Right. Right.
So, you know, it ends up being like, you know, this guy who made this documentary, this short documentary, wins his Oscar and he only gets 30 seconds to give a speech, and he ends up giving like a 4.5-minute speech, and they're trying to play him off, and he says things that, you know, are controversial.
Right.
And they have to, like, get him off the stage, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then that's what's in the news the next day, and it's like, that's what you want to talk about? You know, right.
Yeah,
Joe Blow documentary about a clown who lost his keys?
Right. Yeah, that's always an issue, right? They always have, the award shows always run over and stuff like that, and it drags on a lot. And it's just, they can't stop that, unfortunately, because of those.
And they know that everyone wants to see those big five Oscars. That's why they do four of them at the end.
Right. They're like, stick to the end.
You know, it's like, coming up, Best Picture Oscar. And it's like, no, it's not. Not for another 2.5 hours.
Right. Yeah. Right.
It's like, and, you know, since they run long, there's no way for anyone to know when they can't just time it out and check in at the end, because you don't know when the end is.
Right, not until you tune in for your 11 o'clock news and find that
right.
It's yeah.
Not there yet. Oops.
Oops is right.
Yeah, so next after that is The Artist, which is this silent music thing, which got 10, Moneyball and Warhorse, which is very interesting that, you know, Moneyball, definitely, that was pretty cool. Got 6 each. The Descendants had 5, even though it seemed like they were kind of, like, huge in getting, like, coming in, but at the same time, they only got 5. But then again, it's not as technical of a film, so. But they did get the good ones. They got nominated for the ones that you were saying, John, that people care about.
Right.
Like acting, writing, directing.
Best picture, best actor,
best
director.
Yeah.
Best supporting actress, right?
Let's see here.
No. Sorry. No.
So it's best actor.
I have it. It's best actor. Best picture. Actor in a leading role.
Directing, film editing, and writing.
Right. That's where I saw. Okay, yeah, that's where I saw the other name at. I didn't recognize. I assumed it was a actress.
Yeah. A couple of people actually, you know, they got snubbed a little bit. So, you know, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy was snubbed in terms of best picture.
Well, can I just say, you know, the past 2 years they have had 10 Oscar-nominated films. And years, you know, and the year before that and years before that, they had 5.
Right.
Right? And they came out with 10, and they wanted to have, like, you know, more best actor, best picture nominees, you know, to harken back in the old days, and they had 10. And
generate more money at the box office.
Generate more money at the box office. Generate more money for DVD sales, because you can slap that sticker on there that says nominated for Best Picture. For some reason, this year it's 9. Why is it 9?
So, an interesting thing was they made it very confusing this year. So, it used to be, last year was, here's 10 slots. Write the ones that you're interested in. Write the ones that you believe, you know, write the 10 movies that you believe are you know, deserve to be nominated. This year was just like, write as many as you think. And then the Academy was just like, oh, we'll just arbitrarily pick a number out of that.
So there's no rhyme or reason to the 9. They just picked 9 for some reason.
Yeah.
Even though there's clearly like four other movies that could fill that 10th spot.
Right. Like there are a couple like there's a list, you know, there's possibly like The Ides of March, Tinker Tailor. My God, this isn't
Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Yeah, Soldier Spy.
And then you know, I
people were surprised that Harry Potter wasn't nominated.
I wasn't,
but
it's been going for what, 8 years?
I think I got the list from
Did you make this list of snubs?
No, I did not.
Okay, because Bridesmaids, there's no way in my mind that Bridesmaids should have been nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah, I believe it's from the Hollywood Reporter, most likely.
Hmm.
And as far as actress in a supporting role, Melissa McCarthy was nominated for Bridesmaids. I don't get it. Like,
I don't get it either.
It's a comedy movie. They're like, oh, she was a comic relief in that movie. It was a comedy. Everyone was supposed to be funny.
Comedy actors and actresses that are generally considered comedians or comedians are never really taken seriously by the Academy.
Hmm.
But, like, okay, if you're going to have someone who's nominated as, you know, a supporting actor, a supporting actress, or best actor, best actress, who's a comedian in comedy, that's fine, but like, if they're in a comedy movie and they're the best at being funny in a movie where everyone's funny, like, I don't get that.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it wasn't that funny, and I don't know. That's my opinion about Bridesmaids. I think we talked about it before.
Yeah, so this is So then there were, you know, a couple other ones, like oddly enough, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio for J. Edgar was and then Michael Fassbender for Shame, which was highly acclaimed. He wasn't. You know,
I heard a lot of talk that said that Ryan Gosling was going to get a nomination, but, you know, for either one of these movies, The Ides of March or Drive. Actually, specifically Drive is what I heard.
Yeah, and he got snubbed for both. So,
yeah.
Two movies that were in contention, and he didn't get either. And then actor in the supporting role, of course, Albert Brooks for Drive, who was... There was a lot of talk about him being really, really good. Andy Serkis, who played the lead ape in Planet of the Apes.
I don't think that he could be nominated for that.
Yeah, because... Yeah, right, because we were talking about that last week, right? Voice actors cannot...
If you are not on screen, then you're not an actor.
Right.
That's what they say. So, since his part was completely animated, I don't think he'd be nominated. So it's not a snub because there's no way he could be nominated.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I grabbed this snub from somewhere that was pretty sure it was a Hollywood Reporter, but I could have been completely wrong. But
I mean, that's fine. I'm confused by some of the things on this list. That's all.
Hmm.
Yeah, they were a little left out. Okay, so that's all right. So let's see here. We were talking for the box office. Actually, we'll also link to the list of nominees in the show notes. So if you're interested, just take a look at that, and let us know what you think as well on Twitter at Screenview Show, as well as Facebook.com/TFRadio. All right, so the box office. We were talking about this last week about, you know, subpar sequels to subpar sequels. Apparently enough people cared enough about Underworld to make it the number one film with 25.3. I mean, then again, there wasn't a lot of good, you know, huge stuff coming out, so...
I've heard good things about Red Tails. I was kind of surprised that it didn't blow Underworld out, but of course it's not, you know...
I'm not surprised because they've made movies about the Tuskegee Airmen before.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah. And the film did really try to differentiate itself from any of those other films, so.
You've seen one, you've seen them all, unfortunately.
Yeah. kind of that. Yeah, more or less.
Right.
And then, so number three was Contraband, which actually kind of opened a little. It's not surprising. It dropped 50%, which is usually what action films do in its second week, second or third week.
That's about right.
Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, which actually got not that great of reviews. It got like a 40-something. It's sitting at a 40-something percent, I believe, on Rotten Tomatoes.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
It's very bizarre. It's yeah, Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, 47%, which is very surprising, considering the caliber and the way they were marketing it. It looked really good, so.
Yeah, I mean, sappy story about, you know, clearly Oscar bait movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, let's see. Yeah, their consensus is it's a story worth telling, but it deserves better than the treacly and pretentious treatment director Stephen Daldry gives it.
Hmm.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. Like, I kind of thought it would be handled better than, you know, Remember Me, but still can't get over it. And then number five, our favorite film, Beauty and the Beast in 3D.
Yeah. 3D, yay!
Yeah, 3D. Haywire only opened up at number 6 with $8 million. So...
yeah.
I guess people didn't really gravitate towards it, I guess. Not sure.
It'll probably do well on DVD.
Yeah, it's one of those just like guess. Beating the crap. It's kind of like, you guys ever seen that movie Shoot 'Em Up?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen
that I
movie?
Doubt it's very much like that. It's probably more serious than that.
No. But have you ever seen that movie, Amy? Shoot 'Em Up?
I haven't. No, I haven't.
So the movie Clive didn't Owen. Do very well in the box office, but it's a fun movie. It was a fun movie to watch. So, I mean, Haywire is a serious film, but I'm sure it'll be just as fun to watch when you don't have to pay, you know, like $15 for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Joyful Noise, which is that Queen Latifah movie, is number 7. Mission Impossible is still hanging on. It's still doing
yeah.
really well.
And Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, and Sherlock Holmes. It's actually Sherlock Holmes is both doing really, movies. Really... I'm sorry, what did you say?
Both of them are December movies. They both started, like, did Mission Impossible, was that more of a January movie?
No, it was a December
movie. No, it came on December. It came out before Christmas. Yeah.
It's kind of cool that they're still, like, hanging in there.
Yeah. And Sherlock Holmes is doing really well overseas.
Yeah,
so.
I almost went to go see it this weekend, but
the
timing didn't work out between dinner and a movie.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys have, you know, see these, pay attention to these, but you know when they do commercial trailers, like TV spots for movies, and they always have like that black bar at the top, and they tell you the movie that comes out and when it, like the movie and when it comes out.
Yeah.
Every time I see those, I always attribute it to the movie not being very good.
Oh no.
And then I saw it was for the Sherlock Holmes. I was like, no, now I don't want to see it anymore.
Number one, grow up. There's no way that words on a screen for a movie trailer in any way justify the movie being good or bad. Just because those words are there, you're like, oh, now I'm not going to see a sequel to a movie that I already know I liked.
I was just surprised by it, because that's how I used to judge the films, because, you know, none of the films looked interesting to me when I would see that kind of advertisement. So I was quite surprised when it did that. So, I mean,
I think it might be a lot of trailers do that. You're probably just seen the Sherlock Holmes trailers so many times that you're looking at other stuff now. In the commercials that you haven't seen before. So now you're focusing on...
That's possible. That's quite possible. I might be doing that, because they did market the crap out of that movie.
They did. Maybe you should stop watching so much TV. You stop seeing those commercials.
Yeah, maybe I should. Maybe we won't have anything to talk about anymore.
Well, I was going to stop watching TV.
So The Iron Lady was number 10. They'll most likely get a lot more money because Meryl Streep was nominated for Best Actress.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, most definitely.
Coming out this weekend, tomorrow on Friday, is The Gray, which I will give you guys a review of in a little bit. Man on a Ledge, which is the... Oh my god, I just had his name and I forget it. Sam Worthington film about him standing on a ledge, which is like Phone Booth in the Sky. That's what I kind of consider it to be.
I didn't really know. I had seen like the posters for it in the theaters, and I didn't really know what it was about, but now that I've actually seen the trailer, it looks interesting to me.
Pretty decent. It actually looks... I mean, Phone Booth was actually surprisingly better than I expected it to be. So...
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be a pretty bad movie, but it was good, so... I don't mean Phone Booth... I don't mean to say Phone Booth in the sky as a degrading name for
it. Is it a timeline, like a timeline movie where everything takes place in real time?
I am not sure.
Hmm.
Okay, because Phone Booth was one of those movies.
Yeah. Apparently Man of Legend only got 27% on Rotten
Tomatoes?
Yeah.
There's a lot of heavy hitters in that movie.
Yeah, I know. Next Cop, and Now Wanted Fugitive, Sam Worthington, stands on the ledge of a high-rise building while a hard-living New York police cop... police negotiator Elizabeth Banks tries to talk him down. The longer they are on the ledge, the more she realizes that he might have an ulterior motive.
Yeah. He's getting everyone's attention.
Yeah, and then a really stupid Katherine Heigl movie, One for the Money.
Yeah.
Even get any screeners here in DC, so...
Do you guys remember the movie Two for the Money?
Two for the Money?
Yeah. It was a gambling movie with Al Pacino and Matthew McConaughey? I didn't know about this movie, One for the Money, but I thought like it was a sequel to that.
And then the third installment would be Zero for the Money?
Yeah.
For the money. No, this is a stupid like Katherine Heigl movie where she's like a bounty hunter, I believe.
Yeah, Two for the Money. Al Pacino, Matthew McConaughey, gambling.
Because everybody wants to see Katherine Heigl with a gun.
Right. Yeah.
Because it works so well, and all of the other ones that she's been in, where she's like, I don't know what to do with this.
Yeah.
I heard recently that they did some kind of. Statistics gathering where they looked at the time period between when actors and actresses do movies and like the amount of money that they make and, you know, the quality of the movies. And apparently they judged her as being just in it for the money. She doesn't really care about her craft at all. So she cranks out these, you know, not very good movies.
That just make bank somehow because they're so cheap.
Not necessarily make bank, but they make money and she gets her money, so that's all she cares about.
That's awful. Mm. Well, she did leave that superiorly made show Grey's Anatomy for a fledging movie career, so.
Wow.
I was being sarcastic.
I know you're being sarcastic.
Like, well, John is just like hard. John just had like horrific face on him.
Steph watches that show.
I know, but you're just. Or you're like, oh my god, don't let her hear you.
Yeah.
Steph, I hate your show.
That's right, I never watched it either. I thought, really?
Yeah.
Well, a couple years ago, she was like, this show stinks, I'm going to stop watching it. And now, all of a sudden, she's like, oh, I like this show again.
Oh, crap.
It's like, nothing's changed.
Yeah, it's still crap.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
It's still not as, it's not as funny as Scrubs, and it's not, it's too funny to be ER.
It's too funny to be ER. Bar. Is that
too funny to be?
Yeah. So when it first came out, my buddy Jack was like, "So this show was like a more funny ER, but a less funny Scrubs." And I was like, "Yeah, it seems like that."
And way more stupid. But okay. So some quick movie news. Actually, there's some movie news that might be interested in. Unfortunately, Breaking Dawn has broken $7 billion worldwide.
Oh wow.
And now there are talks that it may continue. 700
billion or 7 billion?
What's that? 700.
Okay, because you said 7 billion. I was like...
Oh, did I say 7? I'm sorry. I meant 700. 2 zeros.
Wow.
So that's a 9-figure mark. And apparently it's so good that it may continue past the books.
How? They have it written past the books.
Well, you know, there's a lot of... Well, there's a... there are ways.
I don't think they're going to go with past the books because honestly, seriously,
the most logical way to go.
Fourth one.
From what I understand about the way the story turns towards the end of the books, there's a very creepy way that the story could turn, that I really don't think that children need to know about.
I know of one. Postpartum depression. I mean, she's already like 3/4 of the way there, right? So,
well, apparently, I mean, you've read the books, right, Amy?
I have.
Steph read the books, and she told me the basic story and how it gets very weird. And apparently, like, the one adult character, not adult character, what the hell's his name? The tan one.
The silverback.
Yeah.
Jacob the werewolf.
The werewolf immediately falls in love with the baby when it's born.
Yeah, ugh. He amputates.
Like, but the thing is that romantic she grows love up with really this fast. Baby.
She grows up really fast.
Because she's a vampire.
So she could potentially be, like, after a very short amount of time, be an adult. So it's not, it's only creepy if you say, oh, he would fall in love with her and they would get married and she'd be a baby and, you know, no, it's not.
And she'd be.
But vampires don't age, right? If you're born a vampire, aren't you always a baby?
She's half human, half vampire.
So she's a female Blade.
Kind of, yeah.
Might be a daywalker.
And the way that they explained it in the book is that she'll age to a certain point, and then she'll be that age, like, forever.
Like a convenient, like, 16 years old?
No, she'll, like, age until she's mature, you know, okay. Which would be anywhere between teenage years and 20, something like that. But, hey, you know, Edward is, like, eternally 18.
You know, it sounds like
barely past the legal limit, if you really think about it.
Bram Stoker is turning around in his grave.
So this is according to MovieWeb.com. It says, Lionsgate president John Feltheimer hopes the franchise continues beyond the finale. He says,
yeah, because he's sitting on a big fat wad of cash.
Right. It's hard for me to imagine a movie that does 700 million plus, or million. I don't mean million.
Well, 700 billion is more than 700 million, so if he says plus at the end...
I'm sorry, million plus. I didn't mean to say billion. Billion was too much. I'm sorry.
That's a lot of money.
700 billion is still a crap ton of cash.
$700 billion is a lot of money.
Yeah.
It kind of depends on whether or not Stephanie Meyer has turned over the copyright and such to, of her, you know, her books over.
I believe
if she signed it over in that way, then yeah, they can do whatever they want.
I believe when you have a movie made from your books, that is part of the process of selling over your copyright.
Well, they can sell over certain versions, like, you know, they can sell over the first book and then the second book and then the third book and then the fourth book after that. You know, it wouldn't necessarily be all of them because they were consecutively, printed. It just depends on how it was worded, one, and, you know, how what was in the contract when all of that was pitched. So, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, so...
Who knows? She might just decide, For 70 billion worldwide, I can crank out a couple more books.
Yeah, it's actually million. I didn't mean to say billion.
She's probably like, I didn't spend a lot of time reading those books in the first place. I could probably just crank out 4 more.
Exactly. So, yeah, 700 million plus doesn't have ongoing value. It's an amazing franchise that they have done a great job of maintaining with absolutely no deterioration. So the simple answer is, boy, I hope so. The Movie Web report goes on to say, since Lionsgate has a television unit, which also cranks out Mad Men, there's a possibility that Stephanie Meyer's novels may be adapted for the small screen.
Already made movies.
Actor Jackson Rathbone, who plays Jasper Hale in the Twilight Saga, revealed he has heard rumblings of this series continuing. Maybe you go back into some of the backstories. I didn't know they had characters. That's been talk of shorts and different new media, too. Nothing has been confirmed yet.
I know it's like an easy answer to say, oh, yeah, I hope it goes past the books. But the more difficult question is, how are you going to get these actors to continue to act in them?
They're not going to. It's going to be like it's going to be like Blade, where they just recast everybody.
Mm. I don't know.
They're
They're already typecast, but they don't want to. They're like, I don't want to be typecast, so I'm going to stop being in these movies.
Or maybe they'll pull a Napoleon Dynamite and come back.
And then they're never heard from. So, never heard from again. So, yeah. Well, you know, they're like, oh, you should have stayed in that role because now you're cleaning up dishes.
Or they just, come back 10 years later and do a cartoon. It'd be fine.
If they do a cartoon, ah.
That'd be so sad. Okay.
A million fangirls suddenly died.
I would die.
I will definitely not be watching that one if it comes out. Oh,
exactly.
My God.
Forget about it.
I was fine with the books. I don't think that the movies actually really tell it very well, because the whole, like I said, the whole charm of the books was the fact that it was told from a single person's point of view, which was the main character. I know a lot of people are like, oh, but she was so dumb. Yeah, she was, but a lot of teenagers that age are. But anyhow, it lost the charm because the first person point of view can't really be relayed in a movie. And so, movies have been okay. I like the books better.
Oh, well. It's usually that way, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that...
Just saying.
You had a weird echo in your voice, at least in my headphones.
I don't know what's going on. I'm trying to get rid of it right now. Yay, technical difficulties. Moving on to some Marvel news. Captain America 2, according to Neil McDonough, who plays Dum Dum Dugan, it'll start at the end of the year after Thor 2 principal photography wraps up. In related news, I don't know if we really talked about this, but I remember talking about the previous Thor 2 director jumping ship over creative differences.
Yeah.
Patty Jenkins. And now Alan Haynes, who actually directed some Game of Thrones television shows, has been hired to be the director for Thor 2.
That makes sense.
Cool.
Yeah. In related news, Spider-Man, spoiler alert, may somehow make his way into the Avengers movie.
Oh, wonderful.
Despite the fact that Spider-Man is part of Sony and Avengers is Marvel.
Yeah.
They might somehow tie in, you know, the origin story of Peter's parents, kind of thing. You know, kind of thing. So,
I don't get that. Is the new Spider-Man movie still Sony?
Yes, it is still with Sony. Unlike X-Men, which they were able to bring back.
Right. It was still distributed by Fox, but it wasn't. They got the property rights back.
Right. Yeah, I don't think they have the proper. I think it's like a partnership now. So Marvel Studios is like, you know, they're providing, you know, consultancy and stuff like that.
Right.
So, which is a good idea. So it's always good.
I don't think they don't need to put Spider-Man in this movie.
Yeah, I think they already have enough going on.
In any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got enough of a story to put together that, you know, squeezing in Spider-Man for the nerds who want to see Spider-Man in an Avengers movie.
Yeah. But
they don't need to do that.
I mean, Spider-Man will be out like in a couple months before or after Avengers anyway. So Yeah, there's always so much going on. I mean, if it makes sense, then yeah, but if not, then why even bother? But it's too late now because they've already done it. You know, it's already there. If it's in there, it's in there. If it's not there, it's not there.
Yeah.
So this is all just talk. So right when we first started this show, Netflix was doing a gigantic, awesome swan dive off the top 3-meter diving board. And it went from pretty much $300 a share to $60 a share.
Ouch.
Late last year because of, you know, their split and their streaming and the price increase and yada. This is a lot of crazy stumbles that occurred that... they lost a lot of money, but after they announced their earnings this past week, it was yesterday, and their stock price jumped 20% today.
Nice.
Not $300, but you know, it's pretty good. Not bad, 20%. They posted revenue of $876 million, which is 47% higher than a year ago. Because they added 220,000 streaming-only customers in the fourth quarter, which is actually a decent amount of people. So a lot of people were like, it was probably a lot of people that quit, and then they're like, I guess I'll go back.
And they found out what it was like to not have Netflix, and they couldn't stand it, so they went back.
Exactly. I can't stand it anymore.
I need my entertainment.
Yeah. But Netflix believes that Amazon will actually break apart their streaming only service, which is currently free with their Amazon Prime. They'll probably break it off and undercut Netflix's $7.99 price, which is a big feat. If they get it to like a pretty good price, then you know they're going to see a lot of people leaving. But Amazon has been adding a lot of content as of late. They've been adding like back shows and current shows and stuff like that. So
I don't think that's necessarily the case. I mean, I think that people will stick with Netflix regardless of the price because, number one, they don't necessarily see it coming out of their account
right
every day or every month. So they're not constantly concerned about the price. Plus, you know, at least the way things work in my mind is, you know, Amazon is for buying things online and buying books and buying CDs and, you know, things like that, and Netflix is for watching TV and watching movies.
Right. Yeah. I think that's what if Amazon's going to undercut them, that's one of the reasons why they'll do that. They're like, hey, check us out. We're Amazon. I know you're used to buying stuff from us for 2-day free shipping, but you can watch shows with us now.
But I think it's hard to get away from that. It's not hard for them to say, oh, hey, we do movies and stuff now, or movies and TVs now. It's harder for them to convince the people who are already on Netflix to say, you know what, I find Amazon more useful to me for that kind of stuff. Which, it's like saying, hey, these Air Jordans cost $150, but you can get these Chuck Taylors for $25. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, people aren't going to buy Chuck Taylors because they already have their Air Jordans. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like that. You know, you're paying more, but that's where the product, you know, that's where it came out of, and that's the best deal. Not the best deal, but that's the most quality thing, even though you're paying more for it.
And consumers have been known to be quite stubborn in terms of changing their habits. So.
Of course.
We are creatures of habit, and I think I agree with what you're saying, John, because it does make sense. I wouldn't my first inclination is not going to Amazon to get movies that I can download and watch them, and then, you know, I don't know. I would go there to go shopping for things, but not, like, to go download a movie and then, like, have a subscription through them. I'm like, you know.
Right.
What's that?
I heard that.
Did somebody just do like...
I didn't do anything.
What was that?
Did you hear that?
Yes.
That I'm pretty sure it got picked up too, but it's... sounded like somebody did a quick waka waka on a turntable.
That was from my computer, I think.
Oh, really? That was weird. that was pretty awesome. That was...
Welcome to Screen View! Woohoo!
Yeah, awesome. Well, we are thinking on our feet here. Keep you guys at home on your feet. All right, so we can start taking in some reviews. I got to see an early screener of The Gray, which comes out tomorrow, starring Liam Neeson, directed by Joe Carnahan, who, if you know, was the guy who directed Narc, which came out, I actually didn't know that it came out like 10 years ago. It's a long time ago.
I didn't like that movie all that much.
Really? I thought it was pretty good. I liked it. So I guess...
Oh, the A-Team. He did the A-Team.
Did he? Oh, yeah, that's right. He did do the
A-Team. Such a good movie.
That was a good movie. I'm kind of sad that they're not going to make another one.
Oh, they're not?
No, it didn't make any money. That movie didn't make anything. Just unfortunately
so good.
Yeah, it was
very good. Very charming.
What's that?
I said it was very charming.
Yeah, it's definitely better than it's very fun. I expected it so
anyway, The Gray.
Oh yeah,
sorry.
So The Gray. In the last several years, if you maybe thought about it, Liam Neeson has taken on an interesting So in his earlier career, he did, like, you know, Schindler's List, things like that, and movies that were, that meant something, that kind of, you know, gripped your heart and never let go, and they're like, wow, that's very, like, thought-provoking and things like that. And it's not dig against his recent movies like Taken or Unknown, where he would just, it would just pretty much went from, like, oh, very heartfelt Liam Neeson to visceral, rip-your-heart-out Liam Neeson. As he got older, which is actually not bad. You know, it's not a bad thing. I'm not saying anything.
They're both good movies, Taken and Unknown.
Yeah, I never saw Unknown. I haven't seen Unknown yet, but they definitely look like very good films.
Yeah.
I'm not. Hang on a second. I'm sorry. I need to catch myself. So while The Gray is a very bland title, it's like, wow, this doesn't really explain anything about the film. It is definitely a very apt explanation of the film, and refers to everything the film stands for. So they are filming in the Arctic in somewhere very cold, so it's obviously a very gray film, because it's just gray everywhere. But it also talks about the gray wolves that they must fight. So, you know, Liam Neeson is going to fight wolves now. He went from fighting humans and...
he's taking on nature!
Yeah, and smugglers and things like that to nature. He's going to fight wolves. And also it refers
to... just as epic as, you know, Chuck Norris.
Exactly. It's going to get to Chuck Norris there. And then also refers to, you know, just like the gray areas that they discuss throughout the film. Like, they talk about faith, they talk about family and love and stuff like that. So it's not, all of it's not black and white. There are various takes on by other people. So they also talk about the humans in the film, which pretty much, along with Liam Neeson's character, Otway, which I actually didn't know what he was saying throughout the film when he said that name until I looked it up. He and a bunch of other people work in an oil rig in the Arctic, and a whole bunch of them, you know, they're ex-cons, they're robbers, they're, you know, murderers kind of stuff. They're just out. They don't belong in the normal society, so...
Which is why they're there, right?
Right, which is exactly why they work there, because, you know, they don't get in trouble. But a couple of them, you know, a plane full of them were leaving that area to get back to the mainland of Alaska to, you know, just do some rest and relaxation time. And then the plane hits turbulence and an engine catches fire and it crashes. So they find themselves in a bunch of them, you know, surprisingly, come out without many injuries. And then they're like, oh, it's time to go and get some. It's time to find our way home. And Liam Neeson takes up his thing and he tries to lead them all home. But unfortunately, they somehow land somewhere near a wolf den. So they have a whole pack of wolves contending to eat them. That's pretty much, you know, they get there, you know, it pretty much it gets to the end. And it's a very unconventional ending. A lot of people that I watched it with were not happy about the ending. I thought it was good. I thought it fit. It pretty much got to that point where, like, I knew what was coming and I was like, yeah, this makes sense. It's a well directed film. It's a well shot film. It's very gritty, like most of not the A-Team, which was pretty a more expensive picture, but his other films, other Joe Carnahan films, were kind of low budget. So I liked it. I didn't expect it to be this good. The commercials made it seem a little cheesy. They didn't really go into the, you know, the conversations and what the gray stood for. It was like, man, it was just pretty much, it made it seem like Liam Neeson would just literally run around punching and fighting wolves the whole time, which is not the case, but I liked it. It was good. So it's not a bad film if you just want to, you know, sit there and if you're there just to expect mind-numbing, like, fighting, you're probably a little disappointed if you get to see the film. So. John, were you going to say something?
I just think it's funny that partway, you know, through the trailer, they show him going Wolverine on a wolf.
Yeah. And I guess a lot of people saw that part and they
laughed at it.
And they thought, you know, people were like, "Whoa, this would be rather interesting." But unfortunately, that does not actually pay off.
Oh.
Oh. Bummer.
You don't actually. It doesn't. You don't get the satisfaction of that part as you would expect it to, as you would expect. Which I guess it kind of makes sense because since this is a low budget, it was like only made for $39 million. It's kind of hard to fight to make it look like you're fighting a wolf when it's literally just a Muppet, you know.
Right.
but actually, I just wanted to bring something up really, really quickly. There's this blog on NPR called Monkey See, and one of the she's the main host of the blog. Her name is Linda Holmes, and she wrote something really funny. She was pretty much like the title of it was "What Should Liam Neeson Punch Next?" It's interesting because I really find it funny because. It's pretty much, it talks about, you know, oh, he's been recently, you know, he used to do Schindler's List and all these, you know, these films. And then recently he started moving into, you know, Clash of the Titans and Taken, Unknown, A-Team, you know, stuff that we've talked about. Then she suggested, so what should Liam Neeson punch next? And a couple of the highlights was Cats. Which, in Claws, Neeson plays a former FBI agent who breaks up a ring of illicit mouse trafficking, only to find that the perpetrators are highly trained Siamese cats. Fighting ensues. And another one was about baristas, which he plays an artisanal fair trade coffee roaster who learns that a major coffee shop chain is going to stop carrying his beans and switch to a mass-produced brand. When he goes to plead his case to customers, they have a misunderstanding to false reports that he's holding the store hostage. Fighting ensues. So I'll link this to the show notes. There's a lot more. There's at least like 10 ideas. And John liked the one about Maggie Smith. I don't know who Maggie Smith is.
She's a very old woman.
So, okay. Yeah. So that's why she wins. I understand. Yeah, if you're watching the video, Maggie Smith... spoiler alert, Maggie Smith wins. Fighting is concluded. So that's the only one that, you know, Liam Neeson will actually lose. Okay. So that brings us to our last but not least topic. Okay. I'm sorry. Let's take a deviation. Amy saw Touch yesterday, which had a special preview.
It was. I didn't get it at first, and I thought, what? Special preview? But yeah, apparently they showed like an issue zero show, and they're going to bring it back in March. So I thought, oh, okay. But I have to say, my reaction to this, first off, I got pissed off.
Okay.
Not happy with it. Okay, and in the show, basically, Kiefer Sutherland plays a single dad to an extremely autistic child who is, I guess, somewhere around 8, 9 years old. I can't remember his exact age, but basically, he's working as a guy that at a airport. He's like a baggage handler, and he gets called away. Because his son, autistic son, has gone off, has disappeared, and now he has to go find him again, and he knows where he is. He's climbed up some tower, and there are people that are, it's like the third time this week, and there are emergency people there, and they basically say, hey, you know, you can't keep having this happen. We're going to have to report you to child services, and, you know, sorry, so bad, you know, so sad, but that's how it is. It kind of bothered me in the fact that, like, I felt this guy's pain because I have a high-functioning autistic kid who is not in anywhere near this, but at the same time, I get a little bit of somewhere the frustration is coming from. What really bothered me was the fact that, like, you know, even in this day and age, like, there would be people that would get the fact that he's autistic. Especially those people that have, you know, if he keeps on doing this, it almost felt like all of the people around that were, like, being affected by the, you know, this little boy, the way that he's reacting and stuff, it's like, you would think that they would get the point that he's autistic, you know.
Right, right. They would be less ignorant to.
Yeah, that they'd be less ignorant, but there was a lot of insensitivity, and so I'm kind of really glad. I don't know if the point of having this show about a kid that's got autism is to make an autism awareness, but like I would think that there have been enough movies and stuff that have been done that people get, you know, autistic people do not function in the world the same way as the rest of us do. So I kind of felt a little bashed over the head by that, but I know why they were doing it. It's because they're, you know, trying to show you the frustrations of this guy and, you know, moving it quite along. And it really irritated me. I was just really, really upset at the whole situation. And they were trying to do it on purpose. But I thought, you know, I'm getting almost to the end of the show, and I thought, okay, if they don't do something fast, I'm really not going to like the show, because I don't want to watch it and be frustrated every single weekend if what they're going to do is just show, you know, how frustrating it is for a single dad to be the dad of a autistic kid, and they're trying to take him out of the home, and I just thought, really? Come on, you know? They're like, oh, it might be better off for him. And I'm like, you don't get it. It's not better off for him to be moved out of this home. This father is willing to go bend over backwards and keep his son and take care of him. He's a good father, but you're wanting him to take him out of the home because what? He puts himself in dangerous situations because he's autistic? It's just like, okay, you penalize society for having fathers that don't do enough, and here you have one that is doing more and then some, and you're penalizing him because he's not doing enough. It's like, wow! Anyway, so I was frustrated. But the underlying theme in this is that we are all somehow interconnected, and so while I had a really frustrating most of it watching it, the level of frustration was kind of eclipsed by the whole making it come full circle at the very end. So I'm like, I think if they can continue to kind of hit on that, where you're like, okay, if you're going to be frustrated, have an equally higher payoff moment before the end, I think they will continue to do well with the show, because I really like what they're trying to do, I guess. And so if anybody's out there is interested in it, that's what I would say. Yeah, I would totally give it a chance, most definitely. I think that it will do well. But if they don't continue to do that contrast of, okay, you're really frustrated and, you know, feeling this for this dad, but they don't come back and do an equally high return and payoff of, now I feel really great because they made it come full circle, then I don't think it's going to continue on, because I don't know that many people are going to sit there and watch that every week and be frustrated and not have a good end result that comes out of it. So, I'll be definitely watching it again in March. But like I said, if they don't continue to keep that pattern, I will not sit there and watch it, because it'll piss me off.
Right, yeah. I guess they were just, you know, trying to make it seem as, you know, so Cupison will try to, his character will kind of further understand, so.
Yeah, I mean, I get it, because it's like, you know, I can see where the frustration comes from, and, you know, the guy is frustrated, the character is frustrated, and the lady that comes in and taking him out of the home, and it's just like, you really do not like her. I don't like her. I wanted her, you know, I was like, kick her out of the house. I was literally yelling. I was yelling at my TV screen last night going, no! Tell her to get the hell out of your house.
Right.
Oh, goodness. I would totally be like, there's the door. Get out. Right. Get out. Just get out. Oh, I was so mad. Anyhow.
Well,
so,
well, thank you for
throw that out there real quick.
No, thank you for sharing.
Now we can
now we can quickly just talk about Friends. I mean, we're only two episodes in since it's returned from its quick.
Well, more than that, we're eight episodes in if you count all of the six that came before winter. So.
Right. Well, right. It took a little hiatus. I know we had a little discussion before it took the hiatus for baseball.
Yeah.
So, just a couple of thoughts, Amy. What do you think so far of the the two episodes that have come so far?
I'm really kind of liking it. I kind of had a suspicion that there was another party, another thing going on. And this, the last two episodes pretty much confirmed it. And I'm really glad that they're doing that. I like the new conflict thing because I thought, hey, you know, you did the two universes together. It almost feels like there's a third one coming in now. And I'm going, I kind of like the switch up of the dynamics. I don't know if waiting so long to get there is working for it, because of course the ratings are kind of low.
It's very kind of, low. Yeah,
it's kind of like one of those things. It's like, you know, I almost wish that they had delayed it until like January and put that in January and then showed it nonstop all the way until the end of the season, rather than let's show six episodes and take a hiatus and then have maybe a show and then a winter break. And then we'll put it back on, and we'll go all the way till the end. And I thought, yeah, it just, I don't know. I kind of wish that that this would have, like, delayed and started in January. But I like where it's going.
John, thoughts, sir?
It's funny because I'm watching it. I mean, I remember a good deal of the TV shows that I've seen before, but I don't remember if I've seen – have we seen – that character on this show before in prior seasons?
The guy?
Yes.
I don't remember. I don't remember him from. And it's probably because I remember him from Mad Men, but I don't remember him from Fringe, like in the third season or earlier in a season or whatever.
Yeah.
But then when Peter was like, "Oh, I cut you in half," I was like, "Oh, I remember that episode, but I don't remember it being him." You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was him. He was in the first season, and then when they killed him off in the first season, that was it. I mean, you waited another 3 years to see him again.
The first season.
I was going to do a little bit of research and find out because I thought, I totally need to go back and see that episode. Because now that they've mentioned it, I'm like, I do remember them cutting a guy in half. Go back to that.
His face was all bandaged. You know, you didn't see him like that for a while.
Just call him. Me and Steph watch, and I just call him Price because that's his character from Mad Men.
Yes. Yeah.
And I'm like, I can't get it out of my mind. That obviously I know that they're different characters, totally different TV shows.
Much
but it's
nicer
like,
man in Mad Men.
Yeah. Like that's and now that I've seen the whole run of Mad Men. He's Price now to me. You know what I mean? So I can't not see him as Price anymore. But aside from that, the other thing that I've been thinking about is that the two worlds that we are watching, the two universes that we're watching, are not the universe that we saw in the first three seasons. And it's, on one hand, it's like, you know, obviously, right now we're trying to follow Peter's story. So, why do I care if you know if this Olivia dies or that Olivia dies or you know whatever? Because the end result is we want to see Peter get back to the other Olivia anyway. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
So, on one hand, it's like you know they're dragging us out, and I'm losing interest. It's sort of weird because I'm losing interest in these characters because I know that in the end it's not unless you know they pull a curveball on us. It's not going to amount to much because he's not going to be like, he's just going to be like, I had a weird dream and you were there and you were there and you were there. You know what I mean?
But you weren't the same.
Right.
Well, I almost want to put out there that I'm kind of getting the vibe that he actually is exactly where he should be. But because he's been removed from the timeline, everything has shifted. And I almost want to say, I wouldn't be surprised if we get to the end and find out that it can't be shifted back. Once it's done, it's done. And so I'm wondering, you know, how will they undo that, if they undo it at all, for one? And for two, what role, because this last episode, it just totally got me. I was like, what the heck? Like the guys that are like the observers?
Right.
It's like, they've made a mistake. That's a one whopper of a mistake.
Yeah, and one of them was shot. So it's like, what did he do to get himself in that situation?
This is the first time where you even thought that maybe they're wrong. Because up until now, it just seems like they've been the entities that have been like, oh, we're controlling and making all the shots and it's for the greater good. But this is almost casting the question whether or not even that, their motives are even off, too.
But I mean, if they're, like you were saying, if there's, you know, you're getting the feeling that there's a third world that's going to be coming in. If there's a third world, there's a fourth world, and then there's a fifth world, and a tenth world, and a 30th world, and a 60th world. You know what I mean?
And technically, the way Orsi and Kurtzman work in terms of alternate timelines, that's how it works. Once one thing changes, it's another. It branches off to something completely new.
Right, right.
So the idea is there's the one world where the two were separate, but you could somehow get across. You knew one existed, but you couldn't get there. But this one is where the two of them are just conjoined, and you could easily get to the other one. And they, everybody knows of each other and things like that.
And I mean, I sort of see it as there are different worlds where different people are the most important person. In the Fringe that we've been watching the first three seasons, that main world, Peter was the most important character or person in that universe. In the other universe, it's constantly fighting with our universe. The most important one is Walter Bishop. Because in that one, he's, you know, Secretary of Defense, and he's got all this power. In the alternate one, it's almost like the most important one is Lincoln. Because some weird fringe event happened to him where his partner got killed, and now it's kind of sort of following his story in a kind of roundabout way, where, you know, they introduce him to this team, and he's like, what's Fringe, and blah, 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 blah. So, you know, where the whole idea is that it's about Olivia, but I think that in a world-by-world sense, none of these worlds is one where, you know, it's almost like if she dies, it doesn't affect how the world works. You know what I mean?
Mm. Like they've shifted I get what you're saying. It's like the first three seasons, it was, you know, these characters, but now it's like the focus keeps on kind of shifting between who's in charge, you know, who's most important now.
Right, and
it has changed the dynamic quite a bit, and yeah. I think that that's had an effect on it too.
Yeah, now it's pretty much come full circle back to Peter. So,
right,
yeah. It's interesting that you were saying that, Amy, about, you know, the Observer saying that, or John actually saying that, you know, she must die. But it's like, I knew this is not the same Olivia.
Right.
But at the same time,
yeah, like in the original Fringe universe from the first three seasons, mm-hmm. would the Observer say to that Olivia, you must die? Probably not. You know what I mean?
Well, the thing is that I was thinking was, he was obviously jumping timelines. All the Observers are capable of very seamlessly jumping timelines. And he somehow, one way or another, made his way from the previous, from the timeline that we know, or the other multiple timelines, and somewhere, he was shot. And he just somehow, he was shot right before he made it to Olivia's, to this Olivia. So what you... When I had to rewatch that maybe like a couple times to actually understand what was going on, and actually hearing what you guys are saying, I formed the idea that maybe it's possible that all of the Olivias have to die.
I don't know. Just sitting here talking about it, I kind of think, like, you know, they screwed up when they pulled Peter out of the timeline the way that they did, because this guy didn't die because Peter didn't kill him. So now they have to deal with the consequences of that, which is this guy that is, he's like the threat. He is the biggest threat that they've had. He's changed all of the shapeshifters in a way that have made them harder to detect, and they don't know who's calling the shots. Yeah. And, you know, so it's like he's the next big bad.
Yeah.
Right.
Because they pulled Peter out of the timeline, and because they did that, this guy never died. And now he is who he is because of that. And I'm like, great. So now they're, and then I'm thinking, well, does that mean that Olivia has to die to get all of that to undo it? And I was like, ah, no.
And Broyles is in cahoots with this guy.
Yeah,
you still don't really know what's going on with this guy, and you don't know what Broyles is up to, like why he's in cahoots with this guy. So
right.
when they
the shapeshifters, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, exactly.
One
yeah,
it's one of them.
Right. So if they, but if they pulled, if they didn't pull him out of the timeline, the alter the Broyles from the other alternate universe would be in half, and
yeah,
he'd be dead.
That's true. Yeah.
So it, yeah, there's definitely like it's kind of weird that they kind of took the fourth season to kind of just pretty much like reboot the sucker more or less.
I wonder if the whole ending is going to be them setting it back to where it is, and they're just going to do a reverse zzz, all the way back to the beginning. Like, no, don't do that.
That would be awesome if they just did a quick like flashback, like a fast rewind back to like season end of season three, and then he's like, you know what, I'm not going to do this, and then he walks away. <It's> just, that would be a really bad cop out. That'd be really bad. But all right, well, thank you very much, guys, for sharing your thoughts on the post winter break of Fringe.
Mm-hmm.
We'll definitely revisit the show again when it returns to, you know, gets a little bit more under its belt.
Or unless something really epic happens in the next issue or the next episode.
Yeah, unless something really, really epic happens, yeah. All right, well, thank you, guys. That's it for us this week. So for John and Amy and myself, we will see you guys next week.
Alrighty.
Bye.
You've been listening to Screen View. Screen View is a Radio Free Cybertron production. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow
us
on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Watch our live stream at tfradio.net/live. Join our Facebook fan page at facebook.com/TF Radio. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, TF Radio Network. Have a question or comment? Leave it on our Facebook fan page or mail it to contact@tfradio.net. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.